Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. No co-host tonight, but I've got a guest. And it's an important topic, in my opinion. It's a very important topic. One that I've always believed has a serious risk to investments and investors. And we're going to be talking about green tyranny. That's the topic of tonight. It's a book written by Rupert Dharwal. And the reason that I think it's so important is that I'm going to just sum the book up in one sentence, and I'll bring my guest on, ask him to say, did I sum it up okay? And that is he's basically saying that most environmentalism, especially climate change or climate warming or whatever the heck they call it this week, is more about bringing America's economic might down and trying to destroy capitalism than it is about worry about the climate and environmental issues. And he's not just climate change. He goes through the whole history of all the big environmental issues in this book and why most of them was more involved with trying to bring America down and trying to upset capitalism and allow for a more socialistic, totalitarian, I don't know if I got that one right, socialist type system in. And so we'll bring Rupert in and see if I sum that book up. So Rupert, what do you say?
Drew, I think that's spot on. The way I saw it is trying to turn America into a form of Europe.
Yeah.
The project to Europeanize America.
You know, I don't want to, take the whole book and throw it out there to our listeners. They can just turn the radio off and move on to something else. But I think that just entices them to say, well, why are they saying that? And you do a great job of that in this book, laying out the history of Europe and climate issues that they've dealt with, especially a focus on Germany, Nazi Germany, and Sweden, and how the issues of those countries pull into this.
That's right. I mean, you mentioned Nazi Germany. The chapter on that is called Europe's First Greens. And it happens to be the case that the Nazi Party was the first party anywhere in the world to have a wind power program. Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah. And they also were concerned about cancer.
Yeah, they thought that it was a tenet of Nazi medicine that cancer was a disease of industrialization. And what's really interesting is there was a German-American doctor who was in Pittsburgh. And when Hitler came to power, he actually went back to Germany. And he then came back to America in due course. And he is the most cited source in the cancer chapter of Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, which is so there are actually linkages that tenet of Nazi medicine found its way into the cancer chapter of Silent Spring, which I think was probably the most influential book of the post-war era.
So let's just start with this, Rupert, and let's get it all on the table. And that is that there are many environmental issues that have been brought up by these groups and so forth that were serious and needed to be addressed. Would you not agree with that?
I completely agree with that. And there are environmental issues of public health, of effluent from factories and so forth, and the Superfund sites that need addressing. There's also the issue of conservation or preservation of preserving species habitats and also wildernesses and so forth. But environmentalism is not about that. It's fundamentally about saying that modern society exists in opposition to nature, and therefore we have to fundamentally change modern society to make it as it were, so it can live with nature. And that involves essentially stopping, ceasing to be an industrial society.
Well, that's because they believe that capitalism is designed to just consume everything regardless what gets in its way. And that's not true. That isn't a capitalism at all.
Yeah, and the old left, the old Marxist left, used to say capitalism would fail. Now the new left, the environmental left, say capitalism is too successful. It produces too much. People consume too much. Their living standards are too high. Their autos are too big. They burn too much gas. They keep their aircon on too much. And so it's an anti-consumption. It's an anti-growth. It's an anti-better tomorrow ideology. And it's also fundamentally, Drew, if I can say, it's anti-freedom. It's about control. It's about telling people how they should live their lives.
Yeah. You know, do you have any statistics as which is a environmentally healthier continent or country, United States, North America versus Europe?
Well, I'll give you an example of how environmentalism makes cities less healthy. And
okay.
That is, about 10 years ago, the European Union decided that to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, they would encourage auto manufacturers to massively increase the amount of diesel cars that they produced. And as a result, around 50% of new cars were in fact diesels. If you're on the sidewalks of the major European cities, you will breathe, you will taste the air from diesel exhaust. American cities, actually the air is hugely cleaner. America did not go down the diesel route, and as a result, your air quality is a lot better.
Well, Rupert, you got to hold on for me. This is a great start to where we're headed here. This is an important issue. This can destroy investors' capital that they have invested if these people get more control. So that's what we want to talk about when we come back. Right now, I got to take a pause with traffic. We're going to be right back with Rupert Darwell and Green Tyranny. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you can trust and help you through all stages of life? Having a team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs gives us the ability to help you prepare your tax return, strategize to help you minimize tax liability, help you visualize and reach your retirement goals, and help guide you in every other facet of personal financial planning. We demonstrate these abilities every Wednesday night on our radio show, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Have you been wanting a second opinion? Then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your Financial Physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE or go online to financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Rupert Darwell and and Chris is playing all English music, one of the greatest contributions the English people have brought to the world. But we're talking about Green Tyranny, Rupert Darwell, and we want to thank him because he's actually in London right now talking with us. So it's 11:20 there as we're here at 6:20. So we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. Rupert, something my company always talks about is economic bias. Economic bias is understanding what somebody else on the other side of the table has in the game, what's the money they're looking for and so forth. And research is no exception. People who come out with theories like climate change, I'm sure there's modicum of truth going on there. But if a researcher comes out with it and gets traction, he wants to build the importance, the crises, the urgency of addressing this so that countries pile money onto him to continue the research they're doing. Is this true?
Yeah, I think if you want to get a government grant for a research project, you link it to climate change. So if you're a marine biologist, you're looking at a special type of shrimp, you're going to say, well, we're going to, my study on this shrimp is the effects of climate change on the shrimp population, you know, and then you get the funding. So there's going to be a bias towards researching topics that attract government funding, and that funding is going to be more available if it's to do with climate change. I think that's absolutely right.
The World Wildlife Fund is run by a couple co-founders, and one of them, Max Nicholson, said something that you say in your book that's unbelievable. I mean, I had to read it twice to make sure that it was what you said. He called it the three nasties: tech, energy, and population. I mean, tell us, how could anybody really, what are you saying there, and how could anybody possibly believe this?
Because it's what we were talking about earlier, Drew, which is, this isn't about preserving particular species and particular habitats, and WWF was actually founded by, it had quite aristocratic origins, because there was a concern that as the Europeans decolonized Africa, the great hunting grounds of hunting reserves would and the big game would be threatened. So it was that's why it was founded. But in the 60s, there was this ideology that actually, as you point out, that it was human drivers of modern society that was imperiling wildlife. So it then became an ideological battle, crusade, if you like, to change those and to change the nature of society. And then, for example, they got into the business of campaigning against nuclear power stations, which has absolutely nothing to do with saving lions and rhinos and zebras or whatever in Africa. That is the nature of environmentalism, which is actually an ideology. It's really helpful to think of this as an ideology like Marxism. I mean, it has different aims in a way, but it's still an ideology.
Yeah. So, you know, how come you can't get logic and sit down and say, okay, you're concerned about this, we're concerned about that, let's look at the logical, let's come to the truth, and let's deal with it together? Why does it always have to be so contentious? Is it just the way it is?
It's contentious because it's basically a clash of ideology. It's basically, to get their way, they have to abrogate your and my freedom. We have to change our lives to suit their agenda, and that's fundamentally why it's contentious.
So, you know, Friedrich Hayek said this years ago, that the more socialism comes along, the more likely we're to end up in a road of serfdom. In other words, our freedoms will be limited. You already see it anyway, don't you? You know, that the more government has control of the healthcare system, then they tell you what you can eat and how you got to drive your car and what you got to do with your children and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
That's absolutely right. When the government starts paying for your healthcare, which actually you pay out of taxes, they therefore have an interest in your personal lifestyle on the grounds that the way you live your life will start costing them money. That's absolutely right.
Now, one of the interesting things about, you know, socialism that I don't think, you know, you hear a lot of young people sort of batter the concept around, that they, you know, kind of flirting with it. But socialism only works if you enslave everybody to the system. In other words, you have to be a part of it, or else it isn't going to work. It's not an either or. Capitalism, you can have a socialist group. You can, like, unions. Unions are basically a socialist group inside of a capitalistic system. You cannot have a capitalistic system inside of a socialistic system.
Yeah, and you get the same thing with environmentalism, because in the 60s, was the first example where people talked about spaceship Earth, that we were all, that humans were on this tiny little planet which was akin to a spaceship. And the thing about being on a spaceship is that what one person does affects everyone else. And that being the case, you have to control it, what everyone does. So that is, in a way, this is even more extreme than socialism, or it's the most extreme variant of it.
So how does Sweden play into all this? Because you make a big point throughout this book that Sweden is a major influencer of all this, and it's much more nefarious than that they're worried about the wildlife or they're worried about the climate change and so forth. What are your references there to Sweden? What are you coming?
Yeah, there's this whole the global warming scare actually started in Sweden in the early 1970s. So Sweden was ruled by a single party for about 40 years, and the Social Democrat Prime Minister Olaf Palme said in 1974 that climate change would be the biggest issue at the end of the 20th century. And I like to say that he said that climate change was going to be a big issue when Al Gore was still at law school. So what was happening in Sweden predated anything that was happening anywhere else. And you ask yourself, why were the Swedish Social Democrats so keen on global warming? After all, Sweden is, some of it's in the Arctic Circle. It's not like global warming is going to be a big problem for it. And the reason is that the Swedish Social Democrats wanted to build a string of nuclear power stations. And the way to persuade ordinary Swedes that nuclear was okay was to say, if we don't have nuclear, we have coal. And if we have coal, the first thing they said was, we're going to have acid rain, and it means our lakes and forests are going to be filled with sulfuric acid and they're going to be killed off. They did that first, and then the next thing they did was global warming. So the science of this was politicized and used for political ends right from the word go.
Wow. And so, here we are today. And, people, opportunists are always going to take advantage of something. And they see that the United States and the economic power and the way we're affecting the world, and those that want to bring the United States down see environmentalism, climate change is a great way to bring America down.
Yeah. And then the thing that's happened recently in the United States over the last 10 years has been that America has emerged as the world's hydrocarbon superpower, and that's thanks to the fracking revolution, which was completely unexpected, but it's transformed America's it's making America energy independent. It's giving American businesses and manufacturers the cheapest energy costs anywhere in the industrialized world. No one can beat the United States on energy costs. I've just been doing a study for businesses in say Alabama. I was looking at Alabama. They're going to be paying about 5 cents a kilowatt hour for their electricity. In the United Kingdom, a similar business would be paying 18 cents a kilowatt hour. Well, that's just a huge advantage. I mean, European firms can't compete, which is why you're seeing a big growth in manufacturing employment in the United States, and it's basically flat or declining in Europe.
Yeah. You're going to have to hold on with me, Rupert. We've got another break we have to take. We're going to come back second half of the show. We're going to talk more about, the foolishness of some of the things they say are improving the climate and so forth. But right now we have to take a break with traffic. We're going to be right back with Green Tyranny. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you and your family can trust and count on for the rest of your life? The Financial Consulate, being fee only, is unable to take commissions or referral fees. We are independent of stockbrokers and insurance companies and work solely as a fiduciary in your best interest. These are the key ingredients of a professional financial advisor. If you've been wanting a second opinion, then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your financial physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE, or go online to financialphysical.com to learn more. That is financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBN.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Rupert Dharwal. His book, Green Tyranny. He also wrote a book on, what was it, the global warming. What was your title of that book?
My first book was The Age of Global Warming.
Yeah.
And the second one's Green Tyranny.
So let's start with that. So what's your take on the climate change? It used to be global warming. And, you know, when I was a teenager, I remember they talked about the ice age coming. So they keep shifting a little bit as we go along. We're now on climate change. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, it goes back. Actually, there was a book written before. We mentioned before the break, we mentioned Sweden. And how Sweden set this all off. In 1972, Sweden hosted the first UN conference on the environment, and there was a book produced at the time, and it said the climate is very fragile. It could go up two degrees, or it could go down 2 degrees. And so at that point, they were kind of hedging their bets a bit. But it was then, as you say, there was concern about global cooling, and then the global warming. But the Swedes were right. They were on to global warming, as I say, in the early 70s.
Yeah, so what is your take on global climate change? Is it a real thing? There's got to be some modicum of truth there, right?
Oh, I think the key thing, what I've argued, is not that the science is wrong, but the science is weak. And the way it is presented to us, as if it's a slam dunk, the science is settled, and that the world is spinning towards catastrophe, is just so extreme and so distorted, willfully distorted. And there are so many things that scientists, the best and honest scientists, do not understand about the climate system. It is incredibly complex. It's a chaotic system. And an honest climate scientist to a lot of these questions will say, we don't know.
Well,
of course, if you're trying to prosecute a case and you're trying to change the nature of society and the economy and so forth, you're not going to be in the business of saying, well, actually, this is uncertain. We don't know.
Well, you don't make, you know, like I said, you have to get urgency amongst politicians to get cash in the door. And the more urgent it is to the politicians, the more cash that's going to come in the door for them.
And if you remember your former Secretary of State, esteemed Secretary of State, I'm being ironic now, of course, John Kerry, said the science is so simple. He admitted that he was completely hopeless at science at school. But he said it was just like an apple falling off a tree. And nothing could be further from the truth. This is really, really complicated. There is so much uncertainty in it. It's incredibly difficult to predict. As I mentioned, it's a chaotic system. So it's this false certainty they give us.
So let's go into some of the solutions that they come up with. They come up with wind power, and they say wind power is a great answer to this. It's renewable. It's always here, et cetera, et cetera. And then they turn around and they rip, forest out of the ground and put in these giant windmills. And then these windmills create these pressure waves and so forth, and birds and bats get killed by it. And they don't ever talk about any of this.
That is absolutely right. It's a scandal that the wind and solar are both really, really bad, have very bad environmental consequences for bird life, for raptors, and for bats. You mentioned the pressure waves from the spinning turbine blades. They cause this pressure shock, and they burst the lungs of bats. They don't hit the blades, but they burst their lungs. They're absolutely awful, this mass slaughter. And as you say, the environmentalists are completely indifferent to it. And the industry, the wind industry, gets waiver after waiver for killing eagles and so forth.
Well, they also have to take
scandal.
They have to take a lot of trees out of the ground and clear the way for these things. And trees are a great way of sucking up carbon dioxide.
Yeah, and to get the wind turbines there, they have to drive tracks through forests, and of course, because they're so long, they can't bend the lorry, so they have these huge long. I mean, it's a desecration.
So you say another thing too that's fascinating. You mentioned solar, and you say that there's this giant solar facility out in the desert, but because of the reflection of the light on the panels and so forth, it creates temperatures of something like 800 degrees, and any bird or anything that flies into it.
It flies them. It burns their feathers, and they fall to the ground and are killed.
And the insects are attracted to it because of the light and so forth, and the birds
and
are attracted to the...
to get the insects, and they're cremated, essentially. Yeah, that's right.
Don't you love it, you know, that we come up with it? We're so smart. We come up with these brilliant solutions and then refuse to admit that there are negative consequences to our brilliant solutions.
True. It's actually worse than that, because if you are genuinely concerned about global warming and carbon dioxide emissions, the green movement, the environmentalists, would be pro-nuclear. They would be protesting outside nuclear power stations, saying, we must keep this power station operational. That has to be the logic of their position. And the fact that they are campaigning to close nuclear shows that global warming is merely a pretext for their agenda, because if they were really concerned about global warming, they would be campaigning for nuclear and not against nuclear.
Yeah. See, now, I'm a big fan of solar on a house-per-house situation, you know, because, like, for example, if you saw my house, I'm perfectly set up for solar, and when the price of solar comes to that economic place, the capitalists will figure out how to get it to me sooner or later. It'd be perfectly logical for me to put it on my house and get the benefit of the solar energy and, you know, only use, you know, electricity from my power plant when I need it.
Yeah, there's an element, dare I say it, Drew, of some kind of free riding on the rest of the grid, because essentially there's a cross subsidy from people. It's a great deal. It's a great deal for the homeowner who's got a roof who can put a solar PV panel on it. Let's leave it at that. I mean, it's a great deal. Can be a great deal.
Yeah, I understand that it's taken advantage, but that's the way they set the system up. But yeah,
that's right.
You know,
that's right.
And you know, so you also say that the logic of renewables isn't so logical because it's intermittent, which is logical.
Yeah, and it's the sticker price, it doesn't reflect the true cost, because you flick on a switch, you expect power instantaneously. You don't expect to go dark when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing. So you have to have backup. So essentially it means you need twice the capital for the same power, same demand for the same consumption. Of course, that raises costs. So you see very clearly there's a diagram in the book, what I call the renewable hockey stick, which shows that above a certain level of wind and solar penetration, basically the cost per kilowatt hour goes up in step with the higher the penetration of the more wind and solar you have on the grid. And that's a function of the intermittency.
Right.
It's the what I call the curse of intermittency.
Yeah, and sooner or later they have to figure out how to store it, and that's still not a problem that they have solved yet.
Exactly right, and it is classic cart before the horse. They should have cracked the storage problem first, and then they could have come along with their wind and solar, even though I'm not really keen on it because actually of the environmental damage, which we just previously discussed. But what they're saying now is, oh, the storage, battery storage and whatever, it's all over, it's going to be, it's on its way. But this is a jam tomorrow story. You know, it's always just over the horizon that the solution is going to be available.
You got to hold on for our last break, and we'll come back to the last part of our show. But right now, we got to take a traffic pause. We'll be right back with Green Tierney and Rupert Darwal. Take it away, traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Rupert Darwal, Green Tierney. You know, Rupert, we're on the last 10 minutes or so of the show, and I got so many other topics I'd love to talk to you about. But I really just want to first emphasize that I believe there are a lot of great environmental issues that need to be addressed. And it's great to have, groups who confront capitalist businesses and say, wait a minute, you shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be polluting this river. You shouldn't be, the CFCs, chlorofluorocarbons or whatever, that were destroying the ozone and so forth. And those are good things. Help to resolve.
Yeah, in a way, the CFC thing was the environmentalists almost didn't have time to get on it because the politics was so clear that and the economics, it was quite easy to do. DuPont had made a substitute for CFCs. It was profitable for them to do it. And in fact, it was the Reagan administration that pushed the world to sign the Montreal Protocol. But the thing about it, why environmentalists, in a way, it wasn't the thing that got them really going, was it didn't require a big change in society. What they really want to do is change the way we live. And replacing CFCs with another propellant or whatever didn't, no one noticed.
Right.
It was just a very easy thing to do.
So when I read your book, I get the feeling that you're saying that there's sort of like a bigger group behind the environmentalists, many who are sincere people, but there's a nefarious group behind there that has a much bigger agenda. Do you have a feel for who that is and what their ultimate goal is?
Well, the subtitle of the book is the Totalitarian Roots of the Climate Industrial Complex. So what is the climate industrial complex? Well, I think at the root of it, the entities that have been there longest have been the billion dollar and more foundations, such as the Rockefeller, the MacArthur foundations. These big foundations that actually got their money originally from capitalism, if you like, got taken over by the left. And they have been on the wrong side, if you like, of the argument from very, very early on. So I talk about the Frankfurt School of Marxist intellectuals who've done so much damage to universities in America. I mean, they started the culture wars that began in the 1960s. They were funded by the Rockefeller Foundations and the Marshall Foundation. I mean, the MacArthur Foundation. It's absolutely extraordinary. These foundations were on the nuclear winter during the 1980s, when Reagan was doing the nuclear arms build up to push the Soviet Union to the table. They concocted the nuclear winter scare, and this was funded by these billionaire foundations. So when they've got this agenda that is deeply, deeply opposed to America's strategic national security interests and freedom and capitalism.
Well, when you look right now at the upcoming presidential election, and you hear some of the scary proposals that some of these people are coming out with, I mean, you got to wonder, where are they getting these radical agendas, and how do they think this is going to help anyone?
Well, the reason why global warming or climate change, or call it what you will, is so necessary to them is because what they're saying is, if you don't do this, you risk a planetary catastrophe. And so this is an example of moral blackmail. They're basically saying to us, you people who don't do what we say and what we want, you are risking your kids' and grandkids' future. And that is blackmail, pure and simple.
Well, they do that in everything that they talk about, you know, that if you don't do this, you know, you're going to destroy all these people and so forth. You know, we got to take all this money away from these people. You know, yeah. That's always the root of the liberal, you know, people is that they, you know, you got to take from a bunch of people and you got to control a bunch of people in order to get what you want.
Yeah. And climate change is the biggest. Gives them the biggest reason, the biggest excuse to do that. And of course, what they forget is that America, sure, is a very large economy. It's the world's largest economy. But America's contribution to carbon dioxide emissions has actually been falling. And the country that burns half the world's coal is not the United States of America, it's China. And all these, you know, all the American green radicals, they're not going to change what China does.
Mm-mm. No, you're absolutely right. So you've obviously studied some of this new Green Deal that these people are talking about. What are your thoughts?
It's completely, the Green New Deal is completely insane. And it's also paradoxically, it's the opposite of socialism in one particular way, because socialism was about taking from the rich and giving to the poor. It was about redistribution. Green, what wind and solar does is exactly the opposite. It takes from the poorest in society through higher energy bills, and it gives it to green investors. So it's, in that respect, it is the opposite to what socialism and indeed the Democratic Party used to stand for, which was actually promoting the economic interests of working people.
And isn't that exactly what happened in California?
Absolutely. And what you see in California is almost the emergence of a feudal society, completely stratified society, where you have the wealthy upper middle classes, if you like, are living in their nice homes on near the cool Pacific waters, and inland in the boiling interior, you have the poor, the California's poor.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, that's fascinating. You know, California. If it weren't for tech and the location of California, they would be a seriously endangered state in the United States.
Well, it's kind of like Europe on the Pacific, isn't it?
I think that's a great way to put it. So tell everyone how they can stay in touch and listen to some of the things you're writing about and so forth, a blog you might have or anything of that sort.
Yeah, I write quite a lot. I've done stuff for the Wall Street Journal, Washington Examiner and so forth. I have to confess, though, Drew, I don't yet have a website up and running, but that is in the works.
Well, your books are out there, and they can get those on Amazon.com.
I'm on Twitter, at Rupert Darwall.
At Rupert Darwall. D-A-R-W-A-L-L. Rupert Darwall. You know, you got anything last 15 seconds to say to the listeners?
I think that America is the last hope of freedom to kill off this insane belief that the world needs, that the Industrial Revolution needs to be reversed, and that freedom needs to be curtailed to save the planet from a non-existent, non-threatening catastrophe.
Yeah. Well, Rupert, I appreciate you staying up with us and sharing with us some of the insights from your book, Green Tyranny. There's so much more we could have talked about, but we're out of time, unfortunately.
It's my pleasure, Drew.
And always a great guest runs very fast, and that's what happened tonight. So I just, Drew Tignanelli here, saying God bless. Show them the way you feel. Things are gonna be much better.